Big show for you here today. It is our Football 301 Yahoo Fantasy Forecast crossover, not crossover podcast here. Mock Draft Monday, first one of draft season. Nate Tice, Justin Boone, they both join me to give out some player to team fits that we absolutely love. We've got Denzel Boston talk. We've got Kenyon Sadiq talk. We got Jeremiah Love going to a spot you're not going to believe. All that and more coming on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to what is not just another edition of the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast or Football 301, because it is a crossover. Don't call it a crossover podcast. It's our first edition of Mock Draft Monday. We're putting it in both feeds just for you guys. And joining me to talk a little ball, because it's a hell of a day to talk ball, it is Nate Tice and Justin Boone on the crossover, not crossover podcast. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. Good to see you guys. We enjoyed a nice dinner last night, which was nice. Maybe a little too many espressos afterwards, which is like ruining our sleep scores. No, but doing great as we kind of wrap up Combine Week right now.
Boone, what's going on, man?
I mean, excited to be here. Excited to be podcasting with Tice. I know. The last time we got to do this was Vegas last summer.
Yeah. But were you on a podcast together? I was trying to think about this. It was the
Q&A. We were around the poker table. And then we also did the Q&A.
We did the Q&A stuff. Okay. Yeah.
That was like 100 years ago.
It seems like a whole lifetime ago.
This whole week has been a lifetime. So, again, if you guys are watching this now, we're pre-taping this from later in the week at the Indianapolis Convention Center here for the NFL Scouting Combine. But it is our first edition of Mock Draft Monday. If you're new to the series, Mock Draft Monday is where we get some of the best draft analysts in the game to come in here and give us some of their favorite player to team fits from their most recent mock draft. We're kind of sort of doing that here because Nate is a draft analyst who does mock drafts, and then Boone and I are just a couple of knuckleheads that do fantasy football stuff. We don't have a mock draft.
We have to see his landing spot in his draft capital, right?
Yeah, that's what I said. We're going to participate in the exercise here as well. Nate's going to give us some of those favorite player to team fits, but we are also going to be doing the same here. So you know what? We're all mock drafting today. Anybody can be a mock draft analyst. They got simulators out there, so the whole deal.
There you go.
It's going to be a good exercise here. So, Nate, we'll start off with you.
Yeah.
What's your favorite player to team fit you want to outline here?
Let's start at the top. It's kind of one of these things that's been kind of a known thing, I would say, for a few months now. Mm-hmm. You never know with this team, but I'm going to just go with Fernando Mendoza to the Raiders. 1-1, because I actually do like this, not only the fact that the Raiders desperately need a quarterback, but also I just like the fit in the Kubiak offense. It's actually kind of ideal for what Mendoza, I think, will be as an NFL player. I think, again, he's kind of getting that high floor, low ceiling label, and I kind of disagree with that a little bit because I do think there's a little more ceiling than people are giving him credit for. I never think he'll end up being that kind of tier one guy, but you know, he could be a guy you obviously can win with in a way if you have nice surroundings around him. And I like some of the skill players they got. Bowers, of course, Genty, kind of just go one more receiver, and I'd really like, we talked about Romeo Doubs on 301 yesterday. Maybe going there, we're fantasy booking, so we're doing more fantasy booking here.
That's what the whole show is.
Yeah. Mendoza throws well on the move. And that matches, again, a Kubiak-Shanahan offense. He throws over the middle really well. He's just very accurate. He throws on time. He's got a quick throwing motion, which is also paramount in that offense, and that's what they kind of prize. It's just one of those where it's like, I think we kind of just like chalk it up. Oh, yeah, it's done. 1-1.
Yeah.
But like, as
to pull back the curtain here for the people, we were discussing our picks and stuff last night at dinner. And Nate's like, well, I can't do Fernando Mendoza, the Raiders. I'm like, actually, you probably should here because I think we're just not going to talk about this guy like all draft season because it's cemented, set in stone.
Yep.
So it's actually good to unpack some of this for the people because we probably won't. Until he gets picked on Thursday night.
Speaking of somebody who's probably not going to get talked to enough about, Brock Bowers last year, right? Fantasy-wise, was not the same guy. Mm-hmm. Got injured early in the season. He tries to play through it, eventually gets shut down. People are so disappointed. They're going to be angry at him. I really think he's going to be a bit of a value this year. Yeah. We've seen now Trey McBride having a fantastic season. His situation completely changing. We're going to have to reassess that once that gets all sorted out. But he's vaulted over Bowers now, and I think people might be forgetting just how good Bowers is. And now if we're going to get him a quarterback and we're going to get Kubiak in there, it's pretty exciting.
And there's proof of concept of this type of offense when it has a dude at tight tight end. Mm-hmm. It, like, they can feed him. And this offense, too, and that's the thing with Mendoza. Like, early on, you know, it's, of course, more dynasty stuff. But, like, early on, it's going to be kind of a safer offense for him where he kind of gets those maybe low usage but high touchdown totals. It's very designery. But also, I just do think he has a decent enough rushing ability where it's like it's going to be like a – 18-yard rusher kind of thing, maybe a touchdown as he scrambles in. But there's enough there. He's not a total statue as well. But, no, the Bowers thing is so true because he's going to be the one of this offense. And that's why the receiver room, they can just – I said Romeo Doubs there, but they can add to it without even going like, we need an absolute ace because they have the ace in the hole. And they also just a nice scheme fit. It really is. Just the guy I'm thinking of is Owen Daniels in the Gary Kubiak offense with the Texans. Okay. And Bowers is a souped-up version of that. But how they used him, it was just – I mean, they designed everything with him, him and Andre Johnson. But so I'm very optimistic about kind of how this actually fits, even though they desperately just need any, like, positivity with that franchise right now.
Can you, for the people, Nate, who aren't as familiar with Mendoza and just kind of your ranking and assessment of him, like, can you kind of stack him with some of the more – like, the prospects in the last few classes?
I would almost have the literal same grade I had C.J. Stroud.
Okay.
That's probably the guy most – kind of how I viewed him, kind of a guy that doesn't have that freak scrambling and rushing ability, which is what will get me to up like
and
up
in that
my
class
grade.
Just Stroud was your
he was my one
yeah yep. yeah
and then Richardson was two and I was lower on Bryce Young. If anyone hears me talk about him, that kind of shouldn't shock you.
But well, he's not big
that's a hard start right there. No, but Mendoza and Stroud would probably be, since I've been in media, that's kind of like the same or most similar grade.
Okay.
A few draft classes ago, because like even the Trevor Lawrence was above. I was high on Justin Fields, so he was a little above that class. I was low on Wilson, and I was lower on Lance. So he was kind of in between those grades. So to me, a purple chip is the top grade I'll ever give, which was like Drake May for me.
Yeah.
Then it's blue chip, which is like, oh, yeah, this guy's number one pick in like every draft class. And then there's kind of that light blue, I call it, and that's what I think Mendoza is, which is still
that makes sense.
It's a first-round quarterback. Yeah. But it's just in a typical class that maybe would have another guy, like to me, if like Arch Manning declared, I think Mendoza would end up being two, just because he just doesn't have those plus traits. Mm-hmm. But he's a good prospect. I think just because I think he's such a known product a little bit because Indiana won so many games. Everyone, okay, he's chalked in as 1-1. I think he's kind of lost some luster. It's like, no, he's still a good prospect and has a chance to be in that maybe quarterback to high end, that quarterback 8 to 12 range kind of thing. That's where the Matt Ryan kind of comparison comes into too.
Totally.
While we're on the Raiders, should we at least mention the Genty stuff that came up this week? Because we talked about potentially bringing it up yesterday. Yeah. We didn't. I think it's one of those things where it's this time of year, a quote like that comes out where...
What Kubiak said essentially was that we want to have a two-back system here. We don't want to give all the work to one guy, which obviously, like you said, a quote like that's going to get some attention.
Yeah, and it gets a lot of attention this time of year. I mentioned on one of our previous shows this week the idea that when players hit free agency, they might not even be the same player they used to be. But because they're getting headlines in fantasy, it pushes their value up a little bit. I think a headline like that gets so much attention, it's going to impact the way people are viewing it. I don't really think it's going to have that much of an impact on his fantasy value.
Like,
they're not going to go out and get somebody that's a significant piece. Sure, they need a backup running back who could come in there. It's not going to be Dylan Lobby, right? Like, they'll probably bring someone in this offseason, but I don't think it's anybody that's going to hurt Genty's value that much.
No, it's like a... I mean, it's kind of how I know people get frustrated with this. To me, I view it as almost what the Falcons did this year, where it's like 70-30. I would maybe put it that way with Algier, but it's not a 50-50. Like, I think even how Walker and Charbonnet were. I know that gets people.
Yeah.
It's more like he's going to get spelled, but it's going to be like a classic spell back where it's like, okay, two series for Genty, maybe three, and then one for the other guy, or third downs, the other guy's in there, and certain like that.
It's smart, too, by the way. Like, it's funny, fantasy
this,
players,
fantasy
players hate this, but every time I talk to an NFL running back, they're always like, thank God there's another guy here. Great.
But John said that. He goes, I interviewed him. He was like, it's going to give me a longer career, because in college I had Roschon, and now I got Tyler. And he goes, even in high school, I didn't take too many touches. And running backs don't get paid, don't have long careers, and this is going to help me get more touches. I was like, very smart, Bajal.
I mean, dude, I did the show with Austin Eckler for years, and he was like trying to will one of those guys into existence.
The Chargers not having one for him. Oh, I thought they always try to find some new pass protection back just to give him like a few reps off, and then it was always like week four. It's like, there's Austin back in there.
Exactly.
Doing pass pro.
The Raiders also have a lot of needs, so I don't think they're going to be spending any sort of draft capital on a second back like Charbonnet style. I don't think we're going to run into that.
I don't think so either.
I think they need to spend their free agent dollars on filling some of the other holes on that roster.
The Algier comparisons is such a good one. It's like, if you can't – stomach like Tyler Allgeier taking some work away from Bijan Robinson. Like, fantasy football is not for you. Like, you just don't have the stomach for this. This
Allgeier stuff always cracked me up because it's like, you guys realize he's not like, he's actually dang good. And like, underlying numbers, like his efficiencies were always way up there. He doesn't fumble. He's getting protection. It's like, he's a really good player. So it's not like, why are you giving this, you know, dipstick more touches? It's like, no, this guy's a really good player.
8,000 yards before they drafted Bijan Robinson. So, again, just to the point there, Boone. I think it's a good point, and it's a reminder that this Raiders, I said this with you on 301, Nate, so for the forecast listeners, just the more you've heard this week in hindsight about what was going on with the Raiders, like, it was just such a complete, we knew it was a mess.
Yeah.
It was even more of a mess than we knew. And I think that shows that there's just some actual good value in this ecosystem here. So Mendoza going in, Kubiak, I like it. I think it's going to be a much more just cohesive situation there in Las Vegas for the Raiders. But I'll take the ball here and get the favorite player to team fit I want to talk about here. And this is Jeremiah Love falling to the 18th pick and being taken by the Minnesota Vikings. Mm. And I've got two things. This is one that's just been like building into this take all week here based on conversations and doing podcasts and stuff. Number one, I think Jeremiah Love's obviously awesome. I think it's probably unlikely that he falls to the 18th pick. However, when you just like go down pick by pick, and I've got this ready here because I'm a prepared podcaster.
Don't worry, I brought up the same point on a Bears pod, and Bears fans are like yelling at me, that'll never happen. Stop talking. But thank you for doing this.
Here's the thing. Like, if he gets past Washington at 7, New Orleans at 8, Kansas City at 9, like, any of those teams could take him. And I was saying on 301, I'd love to see him in Washington. That would be an electric. I mean, any of those teams would be great, and they all have a need at running back. But if he gets past there, you've got Cincinnati at 10. They're set with Chase Brown. Miami at 11 with Devon Achane. Number 12, Dallas. They just paid Javonte Williams. The Rams at 13. They're not taking it back. 14, Baltimore Ravens. They've got Derrick Henry. 15, Tampa Bay, Bucky Irving. Like, that was one I did squint at because he had such a weird year last year, which, my God, like, the Bucky Irving dynasty bros would be an absolute hell. He'd become actually the Tyler Allgeier, too.
They talk so much crap, too. It's if I had all last offseason, it was just like, this is this year's Bucky Irving, because I found him last year, and it's like, okay, we'll see.
Probably won't be one anyway.
Sean Tucker bros too would also be pretty sad. Yeah, they're excited that he might get vaulted to the number 2 spot in the depth chart. That would stop that from happening.
What a life. But anyways, that's one that I think is maybe up 16. The Jets, they're going to franchise tag Breece Hall. 17, obviously Detroit, they've got Jahmyr Gibbs and maybe Dave Montgomery. But then you get to the Vikings at 18. They're the first team that I think, once you get past that run, like, obviously somebody could trade up, anything like that. I think one of those teams like Washington, New Orleans, or Kansas City could trade back. But again, this is the idea of mock drafting, is you're playing out scenarios here. And I think this is a still probably unlikely, but a potential scenario here. And I'm telling you, if this scenario comes to pass, I think it'd be great for Jeremiah Love. Like, you're going to, building into this take all week. I've been kind of saying, this Vikings ecosystem, a little bit overrated. You know, the offensive line was banged up last year, but like, their pass catchers, it's Justin Jefferson, but it's not very deep after that once you get past Jordan Addison. But the running game last year was a big problem. I think the whole thesis of like, well, we can start McCarthy because we've got this great defense, and the running game is going to be pretty badass. It was not that way. They were in a lot of not advantageous down and distance situations. This is a way to correct that, both for the team and from a fantasy standpoint. Boone, I think this would be a hell of a landing spot.
Yeah, it would be a really good one. Aaron Jones has been so good for so long, but the injuries are starting to catch up to him, right? Yep. Like,
probably
every year.
Casualty.
So we went over it last summer on the show. It's you go through like the last 4 years, it's multiple injuries. Yep. It's soft tissue stuff. Like, it's just getting to that point where he can't handle that role. That's why they brought in Jordan Mason, who I think is good, but not necessarily maybe the guy you want to build your whole rushing attack.
Everybody in the football universe is like, agrees on Jordan Mason. Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, he's solid. And then we just move on.
One of those guys that, if you need him to start for a month, okay.
Probably
if you're
building
your whole rushing attack around him, might not be the best idea. And then on top of that, they're trying to figure out the quarterback situation. If you take a little pressure off by bringing in a really solid back who you can kind of help build the offense around, it would be good for J.J. McCarthy, or realistically, whoever actually ends up starting there next year.
It's been one of the things, and it happened when KOC first got there, and he realized how teams play Justin Jefferson, where they play a lot of cover two. And every year, they've been trying to add ways to take advantage of that, because I'd say his first kind of year or two, they're like, oh, man, the Lions were just playing cover two against us, and we had no answers, because they couldn't run the ball, especially with kind of old-age Dalvin Cook and everything. And also, it was the ways to beat cover two when they cloud a receiver's side is either move the receiver around. You have secondary options to punish them, which became Addison and Hockenson, which was a nice little moment there, a little window before Hockenson's now just falling apart and as and
yeah.
It feels like every month he has something off the field now.
Yep, yep.
And the other way to beat it is run the ball. Mm-hmm. And yes, Jordan Mason has like efficiency, but again, this is kind of what I've talked about, Matt. This is like a continuing thought for me is explosiveness from the running back room, Dalvin Cook or Aaron Jones. That's much more needed for those mm-hmm. looks. It's like, yeah, we can get 4 yards. No, let's get 14. Let's get 20 because that's the name of the game now. That's Jeremiah Love to a T.
Yeah.
It's one of these that, like, now I think that's what I've been trying to like kind of like articulate as well this week is that like Jeremiah Love's range is weird.
Yeah.
Because like you said, because, oh, yeah, as much as I want to see him with the Chiefs because I think that would be fun, it's like the Chiefs have so much more they can go after that would help out their team, I think, much more, and they could get someone in free agency and kind of just double dip on that. But, yeah, I really like kind of the Vikings one where just getting some speed there in that backfield would take advantage of the looks they get.
And I think it's important to always remember the context from last season. And as the offseason goes along, you forget some of the stuff that happens during the season. We always talk about the Chargers' offensive line and the injuries they had. The Vikings' offensive line was also a bit of a revolving door last year. And not to make excuses for them, but that definitely was a problem that they had to deal with in a way that maybe could help them bounce back this year if they get a little better injury luck on that offensive line.
Yeah, the whole thesis of what that offense was supposed to be was incorrect because of those offensive line injuries. Like Christian Darrisaw in particular not being healthy was a big one. But it's a great point about like the looks that they would get. It reminds me a lot of like the Raiders when Josh Jacobs led the NFL in rushing because they had Davante Adams. So they're always seeing too high. And it's just like 5 yards, 5 yards, five yards, 20.
One of my favorite stats to look at is which teams on early downs, first and second down, get the most cloud looks, cover two or cover six. And it's hilarious because you think it's like, oh, it's the teams with the best passing attacks. Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, whoever the best receivers are.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like Bengals, Vikings, and then at that time it was like Raiders, and then there's like maybe one other one.
Justin Jefferson had an incredible quote. I think this was the Sam Darnold year, and I think they were about to play the 49ers, and some reporter asked him like, well, you know, they just played Garrett Wilson last week, like did you kind of take anything from the film of like how they defended Garrett Wilson? And you know, he wasn't being mean when he said this. He's like, you know, like all respect intended, but like no disrespect, but like, I'm not Garrett Wilson. And, like, I love Garrett Wilson, but, yeah, it's a totally different situation.
You've seen the Randy Moss Belichick story. So, Randy, even when my dad coached in Minnesota, same thing. They got cover two every play. And the run games turned out to be really good. Mualde Moore, Ontario Smith, these other guys. And always had high rushing, like, efficiencies, all this stuff because of that. But he goes to New England, and he's talking with Belichick. And Belichick was saying, like, this is how I knew he was pretty sharp. Like Moss is, like, a football savant. And he... and Belichick says, all right, we're going to do this with you. And Randy kind of goes, well, you're not going to get any of those looks. And he goes, what do you mean? And he's like, those are all single high, coach. He's like, you're just going to get cover two every day. Like every week, we're just going to get cover two. So he goes, all that film, all that game planning, we're going to get our own game plan every week, every week. And then like Belichick was like, he was right. And so we had to learn how to beat it. But it was like, that's the thing is there are teams, these guys are the needle movers. These are true needle movers, like true top talents. They change the math for the opposing team, just like a good pass rusher. It changes the chip help and everything, but that's what a really good receiver does. Helps out the run game in the funniest ways.
Yeah. All right. So we've got one that is definitely going to happen. Nate's pick. Mine that's probably not going to happen. Boone, can you come somewhere in the middle here with your selection?
I think I can. I'm going to go with Mekhi Lemon going to the Saints with the eighth pick overall. Right. And I figure, at least fantasy-wise, you're going to love this one because you are the big Tyler Shuck guy.
Yeah.
And Tyler Shuck last year.
Biggest Shuck head out there,
baby. He's driving the Shuck truck.
But from a fantasy perspective, you go back and look.
Put it on the t-shirt.
When he got the starting gig from week 9 on, QB 12 in fantasy points per game.
Someone was like trying to tell you that as it was happening.
And he was doing it with Chris Olave getting an absurd amount of targets. That we were on that one all year long, right? 156 targets on the season for him. So maybe this wouldn't be the best, but I don't think it would be a huge, huge problem for him. Mm-hmm. And then Juwan Johnson at tight end had 107 targets last year. And other than that, it was Rashid Shaheed for half the year and not much else. So you don't think that Kellen Moore is going to want to get some more playmakers, some more weapons in that offense and expand what they can do and give Shuck the best chance to potentially be that long-term franchise guy for them. I think this would be a really exciting landing spot. And I know Lemon probably the best out of the slot, right? But last year, we saw Olave in the slot. 57 targets that he had last year came out of the slot. And Kellen Moore, he's going to be able to move these guys around if they end up making a move like this, right? Gives them some versatility. I think it'd be a really exciting, not just for fantasy, but also real life for the Saints. In a division that's, let's face it, pretty wide open. If they make one or two good moves, the Saints could start to run away with that.
I know, the NFC South. It's like, anyone trying? Okay. No, we talked about this with the Saints, too. Is that, like, anything they draft makes sense to me. and good and bad reasons.
Yeah.
But like their offensive line's a lot better than people. I think people are realizing. And young, but they could go there and like boost that up. They could go running back, like Jeremiah Love, day one or later. They could go receiver. They could even go Kenyon Sadiq. And I would totally understand. They could go defense. I would totally understand. But they are kind of like a really interesting team. They had a really fun offense. Kellen Moore, I thought, did a great job. Like, they were just is very sound stuff, but also the like had some nice tweaks.
Flares on it, you know? Because like, they're number one in pre-snap motion percentage
the
on their dropbacks.
The tempo stuff I always talk about. Like, they'll change up the pace of their offense, which I think is really cool because it's just an easy tweak, but it's also it shows that, hey, we have a rookie running this, and it was like he was able to handle it. And then even before that, it was Spencer Rattler was able to handle it. So I'm optimistic about where the Saints are going, but I even like this too is that Kellen Moore has had experience with guys that are slot only, and not even just CD, because he's a power slot that can go, he's more of a Z, but also like Cole Beasley back in the day with Dallas too. Like I believe Kellen was on that staff in Dallas.
Keenan went crazy his 1 year there too.
Yeah,
with the Chargers.
Oh yes, yeah. And so it just he. Because they run choice. They run an offense that actually can make that successful. Yeah. That's why Olave had some success
Devontae
out of it last
Smith
year.
Slot snaps went up when his 1 year there in Philadelphia as well.
Yeah, so it makes a lot of sense. Like that's I want to give Kellen Moore a lot of credit because it's like he puts his guys in really good spots. And like I think Olave was like a great example of what he could do.
And they played for him. Like they stayed competitive. They were
the
like
defense played so much harder. Yeah. Not even just the offense, the defense too. Yeah.
No, I keep saying this. I'm low-key like obsessed with this Saints team right now.
And, I know they're.
And it's mostly because of the Chris Olave experience. Like finally having someone unlock him was great. And I just really do like the way this offense is designed. I love how you said it's very sound. It's like some traditional concepts, but that modern flair to it, I think, is really cool. I think there's ways that they can expand that by adding some of this personnel. And obviously, I love Mekhi Lemon. I agree with you that he would be really well maximized in an offense like this that prioritizes moving these players around. Two notes on this, though. One, the fun part about this event here is you obviously just for me, I don't watch college football. I say this all the time. I just start like charting the players or whatever. So you don't really you just know what they look like on the field. But you get to see the guys at the presser and see them in person. And Mekhi Lemon, I was just talking about this with Adam from the Saints Block Party podcast when I walked in here. He's like, dude, that guy looks like a psycho. Complimentary. Like, did you see him at the point? Like, he's just
intense.
He's like, very intense. He is essentially
competitive dude. So I'm not shocked.
Competitive dude. And like I said to him, you know the like Dylan Raiola, whatever. How people are like, oh, he's like cosplaying like Patrick Mahomes. He's essentially he really is like cosplaying Amon Ross St. Brown. Like he looks like him in a way, that intensity. Yeah. And obviously, he even said that's my comparison, USC receiver, the whole deal. A lot of people have made that comparison. So that's my number one note. My number two note, just why I think this Saints fit. Makes a ton of sense, but might not happen, is if you just look at the Saints, like the receivers they've targeted around, other than Chris Olave, who's obviously awesome. But there was, remember, the Isaac Tesla trade-up happens last year. The team that that we can all say this, it's kind of obvious, the team that they jumped was the Saints.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
the team that they yeah. picked in front of. That's why they made that aggressive trade-up. Tesla, big guy who plays out of the slot. Then, later in the offseason, they trade for Devon Vele.
Yep.
Big guy out of the slot. They take the flyer on Jalen Polk, who's a big guy who should play out of the slot. So I think what that means is that if they were to take Lemon here at 8, they think he's a special player to kind of break some of their size rules for. And I agree. I do think he's a special player.
And that's the thing, too, is like a guy that we've kind of like the midline comparison for Lemon, not like saying this, but like Josh Downs.
Yeah.
Is that that's what the Colts did. Like, was that they had all the size. And then it's like, you can do that if you have so much size, then you can get the guy that's maybe a little undersized because you're not building the whole room out of it. And it would kind of complementary skill sets, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it, man. This would be a really, really fun fit, so I would love to see it. All right, we're going to take our first quick break. We come back. We've got more ideal player-to-team fits coming at you. We're getting to that right after this. All right, we're back. It's our first mock draft Monday of the season. We've got the Football 301, the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast crossover here for our first episode of Mock Draft Monday. Nate, it's your turn. Who is your dream player to team fit you're forecasting here?
I kept kind of getting a little, as we were talking about last night, I was like, I kind of want to get a little like hipstery.
Yeah.
Can I just okay. get, you know, start? No, let's go with the B-sides with some of these matches.
You played the hit at the top with Mendoza.
I did. So, yeah. So I did that. I played the tunes. And all right, we're going to play something from our early records. I'm going Oscar Delp, a tight end from Georgia. going to, what team did I even say go? Going to the Chiefs. That's right. All right. Going to the Chiefs. So
it's
why
such a fever dream. You forgot it.
I really did. No, Oscar Delp. So this tight end class is really interesting. Kenyon Sadiq is an anonymous tight end one. Probably will go in the top. I think he should go in the top 20 picks, but you never know with tight ends and everything. But the battle for tight end two is wide open. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of kind of round three types, round four types. But if you just ever focus on tight ends and you see what guys break out, that doesn't mean these guys cannot become assets down the road, especially dynasty wise. And Delp to me has a little bit of that AJ Barner to him, where he might be round three, round four, but might be a better athlete than he is a good athlete, but a bit more to him, more production in there than he's gotten at Georgia. Because if you watch his film, this guy's like a plus athlete. This guy can get open. This guy can stretch the field. This guy can create with the ball in his hands, but then the ball just never goes his way. And it's like, okay, that's not a him issue. That's just a college offense issue. College quarterbacks just don't use offenses, I should say, just don't use tight ends properly. Like, it's just how it's hard to like get these guys right unless you're Brock Bowers. But then I think Delp too has actual Y inline ability, which is always just that asset I'm going to look at, that snaps played, snaps he can impact early. Why I want him going to the Chiefs is Chiefs not only just boosting up their run game with explosiveness at running back, which they can, I think, do free agency. We've talked about in 301, ETN, Kenneth Walker, or Jeremiah Love, and that kind of fantasy in a different way, not our fantasy, fantasy booking or fan fiction of that sort. But also one of the things they've been missing in this offense, other than outright usable speed, is size, especially at tight end. And I've kind of talked about this a few times. It's like they've missed Blake Bell, I think, more than people realize. And I know that sounds so like, really? It's like, yeah, because that opened up a lot for other guys, i.e. Travis Kelce. Just be able to let him be off ball. Noah Gray fights his butt off. He's just undersized and can't do everything. And so that limits you when you don't have someone that can be in line, because Travis Kelce has always been a minus blocker. Oscar Delp, even early on, even if he doesn't have to take a load as a receiver, again, a guy that can be a boost effect while also down the road have more receiving ability that you can grow with Mahomes. So it's one of these where any team that needs a wide tight end, he's really interesting to me, because he's not just a big, rugged, like my dad or Jackson Haas, like where it's like you're catching one ball and it's like for 4 yards on a check down, you're getting sawed off and that's it. It's like, no, there's actually more to tap into, like Barner had more to tap into as a pro, and you can see him coming along on top of being a plus blocker. So Oscar Delp, he did have, it got reported today, if you want to touch on this, a hairline fracture. They found that in the medicals. I saw that while I was walking over too.
That's why he couldn't do the combine drills, because of a liability issue. Yep. Yeah, so we don't even know how athletic he is.
Yes, and he's going to do the pro day, you already said. So it's nice. Cool. And so like the positive way to spin that, the narrative scouting of that is like, what a team player. Well, how tough he is. I mean, come on. He played with a hairline fracture, so that's how you'll spin it in the positive way. So,
also might be a reason why the ball didn't go his way as much. It's like we see that sometimes. It's like, all right, well, this guy's playing through the injury, but he's not. You really can't emphasize. Yeah, exactly.
Just too many. Yeah, and also one of my classic theories with tight ends is just that you just go for the biggest, longest athletes and hope they figured it out.
Yeah,
he has more real football to him, so that's why if he tests how I think he'll test, it's like all systems go kind of thing, where he'll make my top 100 for sure, but it's kind of more like how much even higher than that I want to go.
And from a dynasty perspective in this class, there's been a lot of talk this week that fantasy wise not as many exciting players maybe as some previous classes, but at tight end, yes, Sadiq is the number one, and we might talk about him a little later. But other than that, there's a bunch of guys that are interesting. And I think I might have brought this up at the show at one point, the idea that once you get to the third, fourth round dynasty rookie drafts, let's start taking shots on those tight ends this year. And we saw last year it worked out. There was a bunch of interesting names last year as well. I think people should be doing that this year, where normally you would be focused on running backs there. I think tight ends this year is going to be a smart way to invest those picks.
I completely agree. That's why I said it's like, might be a draft, a dynasty draft, that you use those round four picks. Like, don't just spend them away. Just don't, include them as like fodder in another trade. It's like, there's some fun dart throws in this draft. Like, there's just a lot in the middle, but that doesn't mean these guys can't become something. It's just right now as prospects, they're more like solid prospects as opposed to like, oh, this is easy. You know, like this guy's easily going to the top 20. It's like more eye of the beholder types and tight end of that, of all positions. Like, the production does not always indicate what they're going to be as a pro. It helps sometimes, like Loveland and Warren and Harold Fannin. It's like, well, you guys were really productive. I'm going to guess you're going to be really productive in the pros. He's kind of the classic tight end that didn't have that, but maybe like once you see like what he can become, it's very exciting.
And not to be like too nostalgic, but we are getting to a time where guys like Travis Kelce, George Kittle, we're getting maybe on the backside of some of these careers. And fantasy-wise, you want to skate to where the puck's going to be, right? So yeah, you got to start looking at who's going to take over. And, yeah, I think that's a great call.
Yeah, right. Boone, I think we tried our hardest to become, like, the official Tucker Kraft podcast last year. And a lot of that is, and, you know, credit to you, Nate. You're one of the first people kind of I saw a point. I was like, this guy's like a real tight end. Like, he can play inline. Yes. He's a huge asset to their blocking abilities. But also, he's dynamic as a pass catcher. He's kind of like the peak of what can happen at this archetype. Maybe that doesn't happen with Delp. Maybe he is more of that A.J. Barner. But it's that same kind of aisle that we want to be shopping here.
Yes.
So it unlocks the Chiefs' offense in a way, too, in addition to just him being good. And I'm also going to stick on Kansas City here. And if we're playing the hits, like, I'll say the line, Bart. You know, I'm going to do it here. Like, the Chiefs need a non-Mickey Mouse wide receiver. I've been saying this for years. The receipts are out there. And this is the time to do it at the 9th overall pick. You got a rare opportunity to take Carnell Tate, who I think is just an awesome prospect, fits all 32 NFL offenses, and he is the opposite of a Mickey Mouse receiver. He is a outside, doesn't travel much in the slot, not a yards after catch guy, but you know what he does that none of these other dudes on this roster does? He gets open. He beats man coverage. I'm not done charting out the sample yet, but like his numbers against man coverage so far, it's incredible in reception perception. Like, he's going to be one of the better man beaters I've charted in the last few classes. I've charted some really good receivers. There's still some work he needs to do against zone coverage. I would like to see him be a better separator against zone underneath quickly and like be more of a yards after catch threat, but this team would also scheme him those opportunities as well. So that's one of it. But like I said, he just stands out in a receive room with like tiny Xavier Worthy, you know, what Rashee Rice, not a guy you can bet on in long term at this point either. So that's a whole nother thing. But even his stuff is all zone coverage underneath. So he would really complete this room. And like I said, you're picking 9th overall. You're not going to be picking 9th overall again if you're Kansas City, most likely. You can't find these type of receiver prospects in the aisles that they've been shopping in previously. So I just think this is a perfect fit. 9th overall, we'll see if Tate makes it there. I think a lot of other teams ahead of him would be interested to get him. But Boone, this is like, I've been beating this drum for a long time, even when other guys have been productive on this team. This really is a perfect fit to me.
Yeah, and they weirdly need more weapons in that offense. Like, you wouldn't
have
thought that.
They need a lot more weapons, to be honest.
I know, like, you wouldn't have thought that a couple years ago when things were humming. But, yeah, it's also going to be a very strange year, I think, for the Chiefs. And we've talked about this a little bit. With Mahomes' injury, how is the season going to start for them? Can they kind of find a way to get through? And I think bringing in more weapons, especially in the pass catching core, I think that could be a really important thing for them.
I've heard this a few times on 301, but like I've had like three different Chiefs rants this year. The latest,
I think we just had one yesterday.
I think we did again. I think we continued.
Like, hey, just crank it out again.
Yeah. And I was trying to look it up real quick, but it was, I looked on Next Gen Stats, and it's not only that the Chiefs have gotten slower, which since their, I would say 2019 was kind of their peak speed. Sammy Watkins, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, they're rolling. They're so fast, and they had a running back that was fast. I'm blanking on his name right now, Williams. But they're also bigger, and that's the thing, is that they've gotten smaller and slower. That you don't want to do both.
Yeah,
smaller and slower is not a way to go through life, son. And so when I look at Tate, though, it's that I said this to you, Matt. It's actually my kind of comparison for him, and like I mean this kind of not as like trying to be totally outlandish, is Reggie Wayne.
Mm.
As far as the size, the length of his arms, his ball skills. Also, just not like maybe not the most dynamic guy after the catch, but just a technician type, outside only kind of type. Not outside only, I shouldn't say, but can win on the outside. And that's the other thing about all these Chiefs guys, and we talk about this, Matt, is that he can win on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And all these other guys are just off. Worthy has to be off the ball. Rice has to be off the ball. Kelce has to be off the ball. Like, every single one of these guys has to be like meticulously crafted to get him open.
Yeah.
As opposed to Tate's just like, line him up, vertical routes, good. He can go win, and he can catch on the sideline. And I think he's a very smart, also, you have to have this with Mahomes, very smart in scramble drills, because he had to do it a little bit with Julian Sain, and that's where you see some of those sideline catches. So I actually think the synergy with Mahomes would just be fantastic.
They've been one of the worst teams against man coverage like the last few years, and some of that is structural, but a lot of it is personnel too.
Yeah.
And like, they don't do some of the tweaks that like even a team like New Orleans, where they're, you know, I'll reference the static score again. They're both kind of low in that, but like they, in terms of New Orleans, do a lot of motion to get these guys open. The Chiefs have kind of backed off that a little bit, and that's been an even bigger problem for getting these guys separation. So it's like, hey, if you can find someone who can do it on his own, third down, you're getting more of those man coverage numbers, it's just going to not just boost like Tate. This would be an incredible landing spot in Dynasty. I'd wonder where he'd end up going there. But yeah, just like overall, I think it helps the offense so much.
Yeah, and why not? I think some teams, when you have these really good quarterbacks, they just start to get comfortable with, they'll figure it out. They can make plays. They can elevate everybody around them. you know, as a Bills fan, I can say that right.
I actually almost said it. I was like, I'm going to let you get with your point. That's so funny.
There's some quarterbacks out there that have had to kind of do it on their own a little bit.
It's really nice to have that mouthwash with those guys.
It would be great to actually get him a player that does make it a little bit easier on him. And if that happens, you know, you said it. Dynasty value-wise, he'd be in the conversation as the 102 in rookie drafts for sure behind Love. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting. I'm going to be thinking about it for the next few months until it doesn't happen. So it is definitely a drum I'm going to keep beating here. Boone, give me your favorite player to team fit for the segment.
Well, I mean, it is the perfect segue here, right? The Bills need a receiver. I had to do it. You guys can give me a hard time if you want to. Nope. But the weird part about Buffalo's situation right now is they're picking too late in the first round to have a shot at one of the top three trio of guys, right? So then it's probably going to be down in the Denzel Boston. I don't even think he's going to get to them. Casey Concepcion or the guy I'm picking here, Omar Cooper Jr.
Choo-choo high train.
I know. Choo-choo. You can give us your thoughts in a second. We've talked about it a little bit here. But for me, I will just say, we've talked about how during the season, I don't have time to go over the prospects, too focused on fantasy and NFL and all that stuff. In January, I'm playing catch up. And when I first look at them, I want to look at them without seeing what anyone else is saying, if I can avoid it. And this year when I did that, there were two players that really stood out to me who I thought I was going to be higher on. One of them I do feel like I'm higher on. The other one is Cooper, who it seems like everybody is loving him. He is
too late.
It's a rocket Spartacus ship right now. The other one was Malachi Fields, who we talked about previous show. Yeah. But Cooper is going to be in that range. If he sneaks into the end of the first round, the Bills are going to be a team that I think he could really help, right? They have to get someone. There's no way with everything that's happened with Buffalo that they don't come out of this offseason, I would say, with multiple new pieces at receiver. And I know Joe Brady this week was talking about how the receiving corps is okay and trying to downplay it. What are they going to say? They're not going to just hold up, you know, wave the white flag.
They leave players under the bus. They leave that to the team owner. Okay. Yeah. He's got that covered.
Or I was going to say, or the receiver discussions. I thought it was going to be Brandon Bean. It's like, that's usually his forte, to be talking about the receiver room, how they have to add to it. But no, Cooper's fun.
I really like Cooper. I mean, I think he's got a nice catch radius for his size too. But the thing that really stands out is the yak ability. Like, once he gets the ball in his hands, he's feisty with it. He's making defenders miss. He is just carrying them with him and shedding them off. I think Buffalo would be so smart to go and get a player like this. And I know it might seem maybe a little bit high, but it seems with all the hype that's been around him that he is probably going to end up going in this range.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I think the quote that we have here from Fernando Mendoza right now, this is great. If we can keep that on screen, where he said, Fernando Mendoza on Indiana, his teammate Omar Cooper Jr., he's like a prime Debo Samuel. He's a gadget guy, also great routes and hands, really helped make me this year. I think that's where I struggle with this landing spot in particular, is because I actually think that Debo Samuel comp is really good. Usually it's like there's a Debo Samuel in every draft, and it's like, Treylon Burks next Debo Samuel. No. But this one actually does make some sense, because I think Debo is a guy that you do have to cater to. You do have to design things for him in his prime, not the current version of Debo Samuel, of course. But he also was not like a total dud against man coverage either. He wasn't he actually played more outside than in the slot in his prime. And obviously you're playing him off ball, you're moving him around, and he was just like running in breaker, which is actually weird, because I think Cooper is better on outbreaking routes and in-breaking routes from what I've seen so far. But that's just the thing with the Bills. Like, they don't have a guy like this, obviously, but like they have an after-the-catch guy in Khalil Shakir, who you do have to design.
As I said, we have a Khalil Shakir at home.
Right. You have a Khalil Shakir at home. This is kind of potentially souped-up Khalil Shakir, but it's just a little bit of you always say the hat on the hat. It's a little bit of that to me. And look, I'm trying to be open-minded here, because my thing is just like, they need an outside guy. They need a Carnell Tate type. You're not going to get a Carnell Tate type, but it certainly would make the offense feel more explosive, even if it's like, all right, well, Bills fans, you hate screen and mesh. Guess what? You're gonna see a lot more bubbles and flats, baby.
No, that's the thing, is like that offense actually features a lot of outbreakers on it, because I want to figure out if that's Joe Brady, if that's Josh Allen, is that the personnel, which is, we'll find out. We'll have more data points on that pretty soon.
My guess on that one is Josh loves throwing the outbreakers.
I do too, because I use this as a knock for other guys, where it's like, oh, he doesn't work over the middle a ton. Josh's numbers have never been super high working over the middle. It's very selective on it, and it's not because he can't. I've seen this dude it's just kind of fun, interesting to me. It's like kind of a can't or won't kind of thing. Like, it's just like, but when you have you know, smoke them if you got them. Mm-hmm. You got the arm to whip out those long outbreakers. Yeah, just do it. Like, if you had not a lot of guys can do it, so do it.
Keeping Brady and having that continuity is great, but it seems like in some of his quotes, if you read between the lines a little bit, this offense may be a little bit different. It seems like maybe McDermott kind of was holding them back, possibly, or maybe they might just be talking that way, but it does seem like we could see some variations in this offense.
That's the
now that he is completely in charge.
That's the thing with the Bills, too. I think they're more, the most interesting subplot for them is not only their defense, which is, I love Jim Leonard. I really do. I think he's going to, that's such a good hire. It really, really is. It's just losing the center, losing the left guard, and losing the O-line coach all in one offseason with a new head coach who's also going to be play calling. And I know they've tried to kind of like insulate Brady a little bit, or he has with Pete Carmichael, trying to get some more vets on the staff. And I totally get that. But I'm just like, it's just one thing I'm keeping my eye on, because it's like, as we see time and time again, what cripples not only just an offense, a team, is interior line play just falling apart, or really any offensive line play falling apart. Look at the Chargers. So I'm just going to keep my eye on that. Josh Allen can mitigate it, but just want to focus. I actually thought the receiver, because I just want to see him with the ball winners, Denzel Boston.
Yeah.
But that's the guy I kind of want to see more with Josh, just because I haven't really, like, he would do back shoulders to Stephon Diggs, but Diggs is just such a unique guy.
Yeah.
I've always just wanted to see him with just like
a big dude,
like Matt Collins plus. Like,
yeah, Gabe Davis, but can get open.
Yeah, Gabe Davis. Yes, souped up Gabe Davis. Something like that, because I don't know. I think that skill set, Football 301, we did the fantasy booking show, and I said Denzel Boston to the Patriots. Mm-hmm. Same argument, same discussion.
We might be talking about Denzel Boston in the next segment here, too.
Yeah, so I know. I might be spoiling some stuff, too.
He's going to come back up. But no, I think the other thing, too, about this Bills thing, and why I think this idea can still work out, even if I think they do need somebody to win against man coverage on the outside, which I don't think is the strength of Cooper's game, is that my thing with the Bills is I want you to double tap this position.
Yeah.
Like, I want you to add a vet and then still take a receiver in the first round. So if you're able to get somebody, you know, like a Michael Pittman type, who is a reliable, a guy who can play outside, was talking to me at the Super Bowl, like, I want to play outside more than I did, you know, want to do more of that, like, perimeter stuff. That would be make a lot of sense there. Like, he can play some X for you, but also can play some Z.
Like him for the Bills.
Yeah.
That's actually not a bad one.
Like, he becomes reliable guy that can get open, and then it's like, all right, well, now we're doing some really fun stuff, working in concert with Cooper and Shakir together. And I think Shakir is a guy who, it's funny, like, even if it's DJ Moore too, like, I think
that was the other one you've
DJ Moore is like the he's kind of in the same archetype of player of Cooper, and you know, I've compared him to like Luther Burden as well. Like, the peak is, it's Malik Nabers of this archetype, because he's like an elite receiver. Ayuk is here. It's like DJ Moore somewhere in the middle there, and like, maybe Cooper can grow to become that, and like, having the actual DJ Moore, you can do that too. He's played for Brady before, so there are a lot of ways that, even if it seems like this is samey here, it can also still work out depending on what they do in free agency.
Yeah, and I will say, if I thought Boston was going to be there at 26, I would have picked him for this, but I don't know that he's going to fall that far.
I've talked about him a lot. I don't want to, like, step on toes of moves go later, but it's like, he's confusing for me because I'm very high on him. He's 2 to me after Tate right now. As of right now, I got to see these testing, all that stuff, size and everything, but he's 2 to me, very close actually, but consensus wise he's much lower. Mm-hmm. Like, I look at him as a guy in the teens, and I think the more the league views him as a guy in the like mid to late 20s, so that's why it's like, for me, I don't know, like, guys get drafted higher than what the consensus is. I might be higher on a guy, might be lower, but that's why I'm just kind of keep my eye on it. It's like, you guys, this is an X, guys. You guys, I feel like you guys should like this a lot.
I mean, bottom line, whether it's Cooper, whether it's someone else, they're going to address this position. They're going to do something. And if they don't, I'm going to be bald by the end of the season, because I'm going to be pulling my hair out every single week watching that offense.
Well, we can't have that. All right. We are going to take another quick break. We come back, more dream prospect to team fits. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back on our Football 301 Yahoo Fantasy Forecast crossover, not crossover podcast for Mock Draft Monday. Nate Tice, take us away. Bring us your third and final.
Hey, let's keep the hipsters thing going. I'm getting outside of round one. We're staying in day two, and I'm going Jonah Coleman to the Broncos. Jonah Coleman, again, just like tight end, running back 2 and running back 3, and how it stacks up outside of Love. Or behind Love is just kind of up in the air. I mean, this week is actually really big for these positions. See how these guys test. Coleman is a running back that I'm always going to be a sucker for. He is a efficient back. He's got good vision, good patience. He runs strong. Kind of I compared him to Mark Ingram. Or, you know, Doug Martin was another one. But just that kind of like wound up tight guy that I always kind of fall in love with. Devin Neal was the example last year. Mualde Moore is maybe the one that kind of like is my epitome of this, you know, from the aughts. but just a guy that can eat the touches. working between the tackles, but he's got. But I want to see how he tests because that's
nobody knows why we just laughed at that.
That's
by the way.
One complimentary. Just that's the one kind of like thing I want to see is like, are you an okay athlete, which kind of like limits you, like because again, that's like the Devin Neal discussion. Or are you solid athlete, good athlete? Can you be a David Montgomery type? Kind of that guy. Montgomery's taller, but anything. He's just like a wound up, packed up, strong runner with good vision. Not a guy that's like, he's not making a living like Javonte Williams did, where it's like early Javonte Williams, where like, I'm running over everybody like that. It's more just he runs through contact really well, and he knows just how to set up blocks with enough juice to get to the edge. Him with RJ Harvey, like Sean Payne always wants to have that kind of complementary skill set. That's what he tried to do with Dobbins last year. The epitome, of course, is Ingram and Kamara. Even like back in the day, he would have like Sproles and somebody else. So, but like Coleman can be the guy that's the early down guy, the in-between the tackles guy. He's great on duo and gap scheme runs that they do a lot of. He complements Harvey. I've never been super high on Harvey, but he complements Harvey very well. Really got like synergy going on with their skill set. So actually, this is one I like said at dinner last night, but then I was like, actually, I like this a lot more now that I'm like really thinking about it. So like round three, I'm thinking here for Coleman. But no, I like him and he's kind of battling for, I would say he's more like my running back three at this point in time, but just one that I like, I just like him. These type of guys, they kind of have a way of sticking in the league because they get on base. Like that's what he does.
Well, we talked about how the Raiders probably can't afford to take a second back high up and use that kind of draft capital. The Broncos have a great team. The Broncos can do that for sure. And this is the fear with RJ Harvey. He was so good for fantasy when he finally got that opportunity when Dobbins went down. And yet it really seems like they're going to bring somebody in there. Yep. I thought it might be Dobbins coming back. I definitely think it could be bringing in a running back in the draft, which would be not a death sentence for Harvey, but it definitely would limit his ceiling fantasy wise and put him in kind of that unfortunate range, which is now a big range because there's so many committee backfields, but it would bump him down into that range where he doesn't really have that shot to be the league winner type anymore.
Yeah, that was the tough thing where it's like, okay, wait, this RJ Harvey's like having a really good run in fantasy. It's like the Broncos run game stinks.
Fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
It really did.
It's the lack of the like efficient singles and doubles that they kind of need there because Harvey, I think, can be a home run hitter if he improves as a rusher, but he's clearly good and useful in the passing game, which is honestly would be, from a fantasy standpoint, this would be like annoying to figure out with these two guys here, but it does make some sense for Coleman because, like you said, Nate, they just clearly need that kind of back.
Yeah, they do, and that's why Dobbins got so many touches in there. It's like he's always going to have that, and this is just something how Payton runs his offense. It's a very at-you offense, especially in the run game. Well, we'll see Davis Webb and how he calls plays, but me some more, but I just think he always wants those two different type of guys, and maybe have the one like kind of like a little receiving back that he'd do some gadget stuff with, like they've had on the roster too. But no, I just I think Harvey too. It's that he improved his patience; he wasn't bouncing stuff as much. But it's kind of just like it was really pulling teeth to just be like, hey, just take what they're blocking for you here. Like as opposed to Coleman, it's like that's his game. And like so, I could see how a coaching staff or a scouting staff goes like, oh, this is exactly what you need. The guy that just gets us on base and then Harvey can put us home or hit the shot plays or yada, yada, yada.
That's sustaining back that can just keep that offense moving. Yeah, that's definitely what they need.
100%. Okay, well, mention this. We're going to talk some Denzel Boston here because I am sending Denzel Boston to the San Francisco 49ers. Boone says he's not sending him to the Bills. He's not going to fall that far to a division round loser. Well, too bad. I'm going to do it anyways. And yeah, I think his range is really tough to figure out.
Yeah, it is.
Now, if he goes out here and I think runs like a sub 4.5 or something, I think there's a chance because he's got those long strides. Many people are saying he's the Diet Coke Mike Evans. Let's see how many times I can say that this draft season. Like, I didn't want to say it once. Now I think I'm just going to.
Under your breath on one show.
And I'm like, screw it. Now I'm going to say it. I mean, look at this right here. There he is. I haven't had a soda in like 13 years either, by the way. So
sounds good right now.
Anyways, maybe I'm off base on the comp here because of that. I don't have the soda experience, but I do have experience watching Denzel Boston as a receiver, and this guy's just so good, and I think he is in many ways exactly what the San Francisco 49ers need. Number one, he's a guy that can move around. Nate, we've talked about it, but we don't see him just as that static X receiver. He can do some of the, like I've seen other people throw out like Puka Nacua type comparisons to him, which I think is because he is really good on those big in-breaking routes, and he's a punt returner, which is insane for his size. So he obviously good with the ball in his hands, which Nacua has been too. The way I think he plays the ball above the rim is very similar in that way. But that's sort of the idea there is that he's a move around player that can do that. But also he is probably going to be like a 70%+ X receiver.
Yeah.
even if it's not close to 80 or 90 or anything like that. And I think they kind of need that guy here because he's going to help Ricky Pearsall too. Like Pearsall, because you don't really want to play a full season of Juwan Jennings as your X receiver because he doesn't give you that speed and separation ability down the field. Pearsall did, so I think it's kind of why they had to do that. But that's not the best use of Pearsall's skill set. I don't think that's really the vision for him long-term either. They want him moving around off ball and creating mismatches underneath. This would unlock two players in one, essentially, with this pick. And again, Boone, it might not happen, but I would love to see it.
Well, no, it's going to be really interesting to see. I think one of the biggest stories for day one and day two of this draft is going to be the receivers, because after you get past that first trio, there's a lot of different styles, and how are teams going to value those guys, and will any of them fall? Will any of them get boosted up? And we'll see, like you said, how some of the guys test and whether that changes things as well. And it's going to be a season of change for the 49ers. Yep. Like there's Jennings being a free agent, Ayuk not coming back, Kittle being hurt. Like it is going to look maybe a little bit different at the start of next year for the 49ers.
Yeah, CMC coming off a bunch of touches. Trent Williams, they're having contract issues with right now. It's
always something in San Francisco.
I mean, like Kittle come off in a late season Achilles and he's 32, 33. And he's a guy that requires a lot of his explosiveness.
It's like, oh, he's coming off the good type of Achilles tear, as we've talked about. It's like, and still an Achilles tear. And like, I saw a picture of him with recently. He's already losing muscle mass in that leg.
The power station was the worst thing they were dealing with. There's a lot of other things they're going to have to figure out.
The team grades came out.
Yeah.
You know, Kalen tweeted this out, or wrote an article on it, and their training staff got like a C-. I'm like, so why are you guys blaming? I think I know the answer for you guys. Well, also that's what kind of like their hack is they've drafted a lot of guys that maybe had medical concerns, and that's how they got them. I mean, the best example was the linebacker they drafted from Alabama, Ronaldo
McClain.
Smith. But anyways, he was
McClain.
I know. I'm trying to think of his name now. but he like fell into like the late 20s because it was just like he had injury concerns. But the 49ers like, yep, swoop him up like that. Like, but then all their guys get hurt, and everyone's like, well, it has to be something to do. It's like, well, drafting these guys that have these concerns already, but it's kind of a theory of mine.
All right, well, it's one I would love to see. Boone, bring us home with your final selection here.
Well, I said we would probably talk about Kenyan Sadiq at some point. This is the one, and this is also one where I'm not sure if he's going to make it to this spot, but I have him going to the Broncos at 30.
I love it.
And Denver has been looking to solve that tight end position for so long, right? Troutman, I mean, Greg Dulcich was a guy there for a little bit. Lucas Kroll had like a moment where he got a little bit of hype. And then a lot of people thought that Evan Engram was going to be the answer last year. I didn't necessarily think that.
Woof.
But early in the year, through the first 7 weeks, he was 12th in targets among tight ends.
Like,
he was getting an opportunity and didn't come through. Sadiq definitely can come through. I think he is the clear number one, like you were saying, in this tight end class. A guy that could be a versatile player. Great hands. Phenomenal. Makes catches, like contested catches like that. I just am shocked by. So I would love to see this happen. And then to go to a team like the Broncos where the receiving core is good, but there's an opportunity for a tight end like him to come in and be one of the top two target getters in the offense, which is what we're always looking for fantasy.
It's an offense that, and Nix has placed down everything. They've become reliant on a lot of screens. It's kind of like downfield or underneath, kind of like, but that's what Sadiq is, a great yak guy. So it's actually, again, that's what Engram was supposed to be. The idea of Engram did make sense. I was like, it's not going to work, but it does make sense. I get why they're trying to go for that type. And again, Peyton has used the kind of like, I mean, Jimmy Graham's the ultimate example, but guys that are kind of like receiving tight ends, you know, truly not blocker types. He's gritty. Sadiq is willing to bring it in the run game, which is really fun. I have no idea what his range is. Like, he can go much higher. It could be a tight end thing, or he goes here. But I do know everyone goes, oh, no, he's number one. And I always bring this up. Watching the Rutgers game, and you got to see some of his downfield ability. He was catching seam balls, and it was like, that's exactly how Sean Payton uses tight ends on seams and underneath the axe stuff. It's like, this is one that, like, I've seen it out there, but it's like, this one makes so much sense if they want to address that position, because it's like perfect for what they need.
Perfect fit for the player too. And I said this last year, like, the Broncos should just be hammering skill position, like hammering playmakers, which they did, running back Pat Bryant as well. But first round, they went for Jahdae Barron. Like this year, I think first round pick, get like a premier guy like this. It makes so much sense for the player and for the team. So definitely would be a post-draft riser for me. I feel like his range is tough to pin down. Could be the Saints. Like, I think that's a very realistic thing for him. That would be super fun. But yeah, this is I wouldn't say it's the floor because anything could happen. But this is kind of where I see him falling here, and I think it would be a really good dynasty rookie pick there. This was a hell of a show, boys.
That was fun.
Hell of a show. It's hell great. Of a week here at the NFL Scouting Combine too. Shout out to you guys. Shout out to Madison. Shout out to Colin. Shout out to Adi. They've been crushing it on the ground here, and everybody back home, JB, Jung, and the boys. It's been fantastic to work with everybody this week. It's been awesome to see you guys as well.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's a parting of the ways here, boys.
Safe travels, dudes.
Yeah,
be great.
Definitely.
I know.
You have to do it again sometime.
I was hoping you'd see this for a little bit after that little USA Canada match. You know? So I was like making sure that you saw
very
that.
Very rude.
I also didn't realize this until literally today, and this shows where my brain's at. I'm staying in room 301, and I like never thought about the connection of all that.
That would have been a great tweet.
I was like, 301, oh, cool. And then like literally as I'm leaving today, because I'm like bringing my bag down and everything, I'm like, oh. That could have been something, like this entire week. Could have made jokes about that this entire week. Well, I got it in right now.
Big branding opportunity missed there by Nate Tyson. That really just shows you where we're at the end of Combine Week. So it is time to end this show. It is time to end our stay here in Indianapolis for the NFL Scouting Combine. Again, shout out to everybody for great work. For the listeners, for the viewers out there, if you subscribe to Football 301, we'd love it if you would subscribe to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast and vice versa. I'm telling you, if you like one show, you're going to like the other because, you know, Boone, I joke about this a lot this week. It's like, yeah, we're a fantasy show, but like we talk some real ball too. So you guys are going to love both shows. And we're going to continue to do Mock Draft Monday on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast feed every week on Monday. Usually we'll also have a guest that to stand on the table, a prospect that they are willing to really go hard for. It's their guy. We didn't do that this week because, let's be honest, boys, we've had so much steak, we shouldn't be standing on any table. So with that, that is going to do it for today's show. Until next time, we'll be back on Tuesday for both shows. Until then, we are out.
Ruben Foster.
There it is.
There's the name. It's Ruben Foster.
Rolando McClain.
Ruben Foster.